Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC, coming to you from Orange County, deep behind the orange curtain, as we call it. Almost entirely smoke-free now, putting out these fires. And I just a word about this. I haven't spent a lot of time talking about it. It's just terrible. I read somewhere there's something north of 140 different fires going as of like this week all around the country. And the devastation here is one thing. The devastation up in Napa, too. Sonoma, Santa Rosa, just terrible stuff. So it's really a heavy time. Well, in other news. Well, the weekend was eventful, not just for me, but it was also eventful for Hillary. You saw the slip and fall that she had in London. And the official story is that she was walking down the stairs holding a cup of coffee and she looked over her shoulder and presto, she's down on her money going down the stairs and breaking her foot. She blamed wearing high heels on the fall. And I'm just going to ask you, do you believe it? Because you remember during the campaign, the very, very infamous moment where leaving the 9/11 memorial, Hillary Clinton just completely lost it, began wobbling. I think some kind of fainting spell or seizure of some type. Was grabbed by her security detail, put in the van. And that footage actually ended up being, I think, a pivotal moment in the campaign. Because you had two older people. And in fact, you know, Hillary's almost 70. Trump turned 70. These are older people. Not old. I said older. And vitality was an issue. And Trump, you know, Trump's a guy who sleeps all of 3 minutes a night. He's got the energy. He's got more energy than I do. And I've got a lot of energy. So the guy was storming the country and Hillary was taking, you know, personal days left and right. And part of it just may very well be health related. And we'll never know until way later what the real truth is. But I don't. So I'm looking at this and a cup of coffee and heels. This is excuse making. There's more to it. And it's just part of the usual obfuscation when it comes to the Clintons. All nonsense, in my view. The substance of her trip, though, is far more worrisome. Because, one, you've got, it's still the same excuse tour. It's still the same excuse tour. There's an absolutely inane, stupid, driveling piece in the Telegraph, which while there is a print edition, and that is exactly, if you've got gerbils, that is exactly what you let the gerbils poop on, is this newspaper. That's it. Eight things, the piece is titled. Eight things, this is journalism. Eight things we learned from Hillary Clinton at the London Literature Festival. This is the Brits. The cradle of, you know, of our civilization. This is what they're talking about. Eight things we learned from Hillary Clinton. One of them is that she's not angry anymore. They're putting this in print. She's not angry anymore because of course, the journalists are taking her word for it. She gets up there and through gritted teeth, she's saying, "I am not angry anymore." And they're like, "Oh, perfect. She's not angry anymore. Everything's good." Number three, Vladimir Putin is sexist. Because this is the problem. You listen to Hillary and at every turn, there is some excuse for why she's a victim of why things didn't work out. And it's always something external, right? That's what the whole book is about. What happened? I don't know what happened. You lost. That's what happened. But it's always somebody else's fault. There's always some external forces at play. And that's, I want you to just hold on to that for a minute, because I do want to come back to this. It's critical. But there was one interesting thing, which I don't believe this, but I think it's interesting the way she's framing it. Because she said during this Q&A session at this I don't know, might as well have been a poetry reading. You know, I mean, this is all fictional material anyway. So she says that Trump was stunned to win, that when Trump, when she placed the concession call into Donald Trump on election night, well, it would have been in the morning, election morning, it was really quick. We knew that. We knew it was a quick call. And Clinton said it was really terrible. It didn't last long. There wasn't much to say. He was surprised, meaning Trump. Trump was surprised, according to Clinton. I bet he was surprised, too. You know, I do believe that. But do you like how she's framing it? He sounded stunned, but incredibly ecstatic. You could tell he thought he'd never be receiving that call. And I never thought I'd be making it. Yeah. Well, no, that's true. I mean, she didn't think she was going to make it. But it's interesting that she's saying that Trump was really shocked and surprised. And I imagine that when you find out that you've won the presidency, that you are a little bit shocked and surprised, even if you are Donald Trump. But I think to some extent she's posturing a little bit to place herself in a power position. I think that's what this is. I think there's a bit of posturing. With the press, you know, of course, the Telegraph here just ate it all up and made a big deal about it. Ah, lest we not forget another thing that we learned from Hillary Clinton in London. This is all before she broke her foot. This is all before she broke her foot. She was completely intact. Humpty Dumpty was whole at the time of these pronouncements. She thinks the double standard is alive and well. See, she will not let the victim thing go. And to me, this speaks, this, why is this relevant? It's relevant. I know she's a has-been. She's never going to get elected. I know Trump is sending off tweets saying Hillary in 2020. Sure hope so. Of course he hopes so. Could beat her, you know, with, you know, half his brain tied behind his back. That's not the point. It's all relevant because Hillary Clinton still has a following. You see, there are 3,000 people that showed up at this event in London. 3,000 people. And they paid to be there. They paid to breathe the same oxygen as her. And they gave her standing ovations. Two standing ovations. So there's people everywhere that still find this woman, this revolting creature, relevant. And my thinking on this is, for as long as liberals and whoever, it doesn't matter, as long as people find her relevant, and for as long as she celebrates this, I'm a victim, and everything happened to me, and there's sexism, and there's a double standard, and there's a glass ceiling, and all this nonsense, I think it's worth examining our attitudes about victims in society. No, my theory on this is that we societally have evolved. We've come a long way from the world. I will even say from the world, not just the country, but from the world that my parents were born into. So if I think about my father, born in 1941, during World War II, in territory occupied by Nazi Germany at the time. And I think about his upbringing, you know, My father was like pretty happy growing up if he was able to get a banana. I mean, that was like pretty cool for him. If he could get some fresh fruit growing up under Stalin in communist Czechoslovakia, it's pretty cool to get fresh fruit. And I bring this up because now look at our world. I mean, you know, poor people have two cars and a TV. And we have so much. We really do. The Western world, we are comfortable. And so we have to find ways. This is a human nature thing. We have to find ways to make ourselves different and to stand out. And because liberalism has been so popular in the last 30 years, one of the chief ways that people can stand out and be different is to claim victim status, is to say, there's this perceived slight. And this is not to say that slights don't, it's not to, that don't happen. It's not to say that there is not sexism in society or racism or other isms that are not good and that we want to work towards not having. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that we go out of our way to find them because we've got this rich lady over here. I mean, that's what I mean. Well-educated, top-shelf education, privileged, up the yin-yang. I mean, Hillary's a privileged person. She's a privileged human being. And I don't fault her for that. But I find it very silly to see somebody so privileged really not be grateful. That's what it is to me. Instead, focusing on all these slights, all these injustices, all these wrongs. And this is not healthy. It is not healthy. Let's take her out of it for a minute. This is not healthy for us. This is not healthy for my children and your children to grow up in a world where they are told, oh, mommy and daddy are so, oh, we are just so upset on your behalf. We are so upset and we're going to make this right. And oh, you and validate feelings of being wronged. You know, you're a parent or maybe an aunt and uncle. You know kids. And I, you know, what do you do? What's the best thing for a kid? My opinion, the best thing for a kid when it comes to feelings of victimization. By the way, this is an innate human quality. We innately feel wronged. And it's through our upbringing and good parenting that we're taught to sort of not obsess about it. I'll give you an example. My daughter comes up and says, oh, Daniel, he did this horrible. And I just let it go. Work it out with him. Come back to me when you guys solve it. My wife routinely will just send the kids back to solve things on their own. I don't want to condition my children to rely on parental authority to solve their problems. That is the world that liberals have created. They want authority figures, we'll call it the government, right? The government to come in, or some administrator in a college, or some agency to solve conflicts between people. And these agencies, these authority figures, assign a higher protected status to the perceived victim, to the person who brings the grievance. And what does it do? It creates an entire society of people who are unable to resolve conflicts. Now, I should celebrate this because I'm an attorney. And so as a lawyer, I make money when people have conflicts and they need it resolved. So I, you know, this is for me, it's good for business, okay? But I'm going to take my selfish hat off for a second and just put on I want the best America. I want the best me and I want the best you. And most importantly, I care about the future, about the world that our kids are going to be in. And this, to me, I just, to watch Hillary Clinton and anyone who is in her position with that type of a platform to use victimhood as a currency to advance her, I don't know, her own petty grievances, it's... This is wrong. It's done. We're over it. And even some, man, I think at this point, the tide is turning against her a little bit here. And even many Democrats are starting to raise an eyebrow. And some are even speaking out publicly about this. But the broader issue remains. You know, we've got colleges where, you know, Halloween's coming up. And now there's going to be all this talk about what costumes we can and cannot have. You know what? Yeah, I got a great idea for what costume you can and cannot wear. Whatever. Wear a costume and let these kids, and they're not kids, but let these 20-year-olds show up at a costume party and let it be tacky. In fact, let it be offensive. And let them feel the shame of an offensive costume. And you know what? Maybe the next year, they're not going to do that. You know, we actually have built-in mechanisms that solve this type of stuff without the need of outside authority. But see, that at the end of, I don't want to get pessimistic on you. I am an optimist. I am. No, I really am. I really am. If you listen to the program long enough, you know this. I believe and I hope for great things. But I really think this is part of this whole victim narrative is part of a greater plot where authoritarians want power. You know, what power does the government really have if people are self-sufficient? What power does these politicians have if people are strong and emotionally independent? No. Politicians have power when we need them, and we need them when we're weak. And why would we willingly put ourselves in that position? It starts from a young age. It actually starts, I'm out of time. It starts with helicopter parenting. Have you heard this term? Helicopter parenting. It does not involve the flying of any fixed rotor aircraft. I will explain when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Now, I'm about to get into some hot water with some of my closest friends. And I just when I talk about helicopter parents, you heard this term? Parents, well, it just means that parents that hover over their children. That's where the term comes from. When I talk about helicopter parents, I don't mean any of you. Okay? So if you know me outside of this program, and I'm talking about some experiences that I've had, I'm not talking about you. How's that for a disclaimer? No, in fact, I'm talking about, there is an article. Hold on, it's in my stack here. This is a great article by Kirsten Fleming in the New York Post today. Crazy parents are calling up colleges pretending to be their kids. No, legit. I mean, Bill's dying in there. Bill, are you going to be okay? You didn't do this as a parent, did you? With your kids? Okay, good. You're normal. No, parents are so used to micromanaging their kids' lives these days that they're calling colleges and actually asking provosts and important administrators to go check on their kids in the dorm room and get them out of bed and escort them to class. Can you imagine this? So I'm looking at this article and I'm going, look, this kind of stuff happens, but at an early age, before college, let's not leave college off to the side for a second. Before college, helicopter parenting is where parents, you know, mediate and intervene in conflicts that their kids have. I remember in elementary school, when I was little, you know, I would say, I'm going to tell my mom, you know, I would, you know, kids say that. I'm going to tell my mom is going to call your mom and we're really going to have it out. But then what happened? You know, I'd go home and tell my mom, and my mom would tell me to go get a grip and to stop whining to her. And then I have to go back to the playground and, you know, my mom didn't call you because she was busy, you know, and save face. But I'd have to solve the conflict. And you did, too. You know, this is how we grew up. But increasingly, the trend is toward parents being ever-present, omnipresent, and mediative with conflicts that arise that are good for kids to solve at a young age. And in turn, then, we're creating these young adults that are not self-sufficient. They're actually, in many respects, emotionally defective. Is that a terrible put-down? Call somebody emotionally defective. It's a microaggression. That's right. At the very least, but it is. It's true. Just got this. I don't know. These adults that haven't adulted yet, and it's this group that trades on slights, because that is how you get attention. That is how you call the attention of the authority figure, whether it's the parent or the teacher, or the professor, or the dean of students, or, the police in the state later on, is you raise your hand and you say, I'm a victim. I'm a victim. And you know what? You know, actually, one really perverse thing that this does, when we're talking about the Harvey Weinstein scandal and we're talking about other very legitimate instances of victimization or examples of victimization. You know, when we get too sensitive about these microaggressions and about all these little, perceived slights, you're actually, you know what you're doing? You're taking attention away from people who really have been hurt, who really need the attention who need protection and intervention and rightful outrage. And that's part of the problem, I think, with the Weinstein scandal is we're getting outraged over everything. We're always outraged. We're outraged. And then you hear bits and pieces of something that's truly horrific. And what do people do? They don't, I'm out of outrage today. The boy who cried wolf. So, maybe we really ought to examine this. I don't know. Oh, well, yes, Trump had some microaggression today on with Bannon. No, it wasn't microaggression at all, but he's made up. He's made up with Mitch McConnell. I'm going to talk about this when we come back. Fascinating stuff. We got to read between the lines, and it's so I'm gonna get my tea leaves ready here during the break. John Wolf up next with the news. Don't go anywhere.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
You know, I have a perceived slight as well. If we're talking about victimhood. Sam Rogowski, CM Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC. Just a last segment talking about, this victim culture, where everybody's a victim. And we really just are overdoing it in general. But can I register a victim complaint? So over the weekend, Sherry had something, and so I had the night off with the kids, and most people, I think, my position after a long week would just stay home and maybe watch a movie. But no, I decided to take my kids out solo for a nice dinner at a food place. It's not food for kids. This is the crucial place. It's a restaurant. It's not fancy, but they have kind of more kind of gourmet type food that you would love, but most 4-year-olds wouldn't. And so I take my three kids, and I meet producer Robbie at the restaurant, who shows up wearing a cowboy hat and flannel. So it's starting to look, I'm just going to say this, it's starting to look very Brokeback Mountain, okay? And we're there, and now this is very modern, okay? I may live in Orange County, but we're progressive here, okay? So Robbie and I are there, and my three cute kids, and we just look like a great family, okay? Well, anyway, we are leaving the restaurant. Robbie's, you're walking ahead of me. My three kids are in between us, and I'm at the back end of it. And this guy walks by me, and he just gave me the dirtiest look. I mean, it was... No, he looked like a guy who is a mortgage broker but pretends to be a biker. That's what he looked like to me, and he just gave me this really dirty look, and I think it was an aggression. I honestly think that was discriminatory behavior, based on his perception of my sexual orientation. Oh, I don't know. Who do I complain about that to? Apparently you all. So I'm glad we could share this moment. Anyways, Mitch McConnell and Trump had a joint press conference today. Now, this is big news. This love-in, because that's what it was. It was a love-in. It's big news because the two of them have been at odds with each other, to say the least. I mean, Mitch McConnell, he's the Senate Majority Leader, and this is a very embodiment of the swamp that Trump intends to drain. And Trump, has launched most people believe, with some tacit approval, Bannon has launched this campaign against incumbent senators with tacit approval from Trump. So, certainly high tension between Trump and McConnell. If you're wondering if I'm characterizing it properly as a love-in, let me have you be the judge. Because let's see. Yeah. Oh, let's play this right here. This is exactly where it where to give you some flavor of the type of mush that was going on today in the Rose Garden. Listen to Trump talk about McConnell.
My relationship with this gentleman is outstanding, has been outstanding. What Mitch will tell you is that maybe with the exception of a few, and that is a very small few, I have a fantastic relationship with the people in the Senate and with the people in Congress. I mean, I have a with our House of Representatives. If you read the papers, you think I'm like on one island and they're like on the other. Well, it's not the way it is.
Yeah, so you got to parse this through. Again, I promised I was going to give you some read on this. My relationship with this gentleman is outstanding. Notice the use of the present tense, because it might be outstanding right then and there when they're standing in the Oval, in the Rose Garden. But it has not been outstanding at all. In fact, in no way could anything about their relationship be described as outstanding. So when I come back, let me explain what's going on, okay? Because this is a deliberate move on both of their parts. Both Trump and McConnell have an agenda, okay? It's not about their relationship. I'll give you that clue. But it is about their individual agendas, and they both can be useful to each other. More on this when we come back. Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KBC.
Sam Rachofsky here. A public service for those of you listening to the news. I know John Wolf probably intends to get to this story because he's a serious news guy. So he would get to this story. It's so important. Apparently, a 7-Eleven patron was busted in a nacho cheese attack. She took a cup of what is described as hot golden goo and threw it at an employee working there. Can you imagine getting seared like that with hot nacho cheese? Both disgusting and injurious at the same time. You know, don't get anywhere near any agitated people at a 7-Eleven holding nacho cheese. But if you do, and if you come into contact with the hot golden goo, as it's being described in the police report, you want to call Attorney Sweet James. He's the attorney we trust here on the program to take care of your injury needs. You don't want to talk to them. You don't want to reason with a person who throws hot golden goo. That's not a good idea. You don't want to talk to the insurance company. In fact, just, call Sweet James. He's easy to talk to, real guy. He's got a phone number that you can call 24/7. There's always somebody that can take your call, help you. I'll give you the number now, 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021. Keep that in your hip pocket. You never know when you need Sweet James. And just know, he's my lawyer, and he can be yours, too. Also has a website. You can check that out. No recovery, no fee. Great, easy, fantastic people all the way around. Oh, the website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Nation. Back live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, I've been plowing through the news today so quickly that I have neglected to give you the phone number, 800-222-5222. You know the number, but for those of you new, 1-800-222-5222 if you'd like to be on the program. And my email, as always, sam@samnation.com. Did that guy respond to your response, Rob? Because there's no. So on Twitter @samnation, a little bit of hate came our way. So producer Robbie took care of it. And if you're curious about what we're talking about, go to Twitter. Well, no. Well, you see, I'm getting to it. This is so important. So what is this lovin'? I'll give you another clip of this lovin' between Mitch McConnell and Trump. And, you know, these two have been warring enemies. You've got Mitch McConnell, who's been in the Senate since, you know, the prehistoric, like since the Bronze Age. Right. He's been there that long. And Trump, he's the new kid on the block. He's the outsider who's promised to drain the swamp. So the guy like Mitch McConnell, who is an establishment Republican, you could imagine that him and Trump be oil and water and not necessarily get along. But here I played the clip just last segment of Trump giving McConnell love at the press conference. And then here's just another clip to show you, hey, look, this is what McConnell is saying back at Trump. So I don't want you to think that it's a one-sided love. And listen to what McConnell says.
I want to underscore what the president said. We have the same agenda. We've been friends and acquaintances for a long time. We talk frequently. We don't give you a readout every time we have a conversation, but frequently we talk on the weekends about the issues that are before us. And I think what the president and I would both like to say to you today, contrary to what some of you may have reported, we're together totally on this agenda to move America forward.
This is a 100% capitulation by Mitch McConnell to Trump. And it happened. It happened because Mitch McConnell's a lot of things. OK, I get it. A lot of you don't like him. I understand that. But make no mistake, he's a political animal and he understands he's starting to get it. He can't beat Trump. So he's got to join Trump. Otherwise, he's toast. It's finally beginning to sink in. And Trump's realizing he needs McConnell, too. So, that's it, because even though, yes, even though the legislation has to be introduced in Congress, that's not the way it's reported in the media. The media reports it as if we don't have repeal and replace of Obamacare, if we don't have tax reform, it's going to be the president's fault. That's going to be Congress's fault, too. So everybody loses. So they're understanding that they need each other in order to get to where they need to be. Oh, yeah, no, that's right. So, all right, back up. We're up against the clock here. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
News, talk, evolve, 790 KBC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And just a reminder, our second week of 2 hours, so don't go anywhere after the segment because we'll just have a little bit of news. And then we're back for another entire hour until 9 o'clock. So, yay! Well, look, this relationship that we are led to believe exists between McConnell and Trump, as evidenced by their joint press conference in the Rose Garden. What are we supposed to make of this? See, the press is focusing on the wrong thing, as per usual. I saw Acosta, Jim Acosta from CNN. Lies, lies, lies. It's all lies. Okay, of course. I think they're both BSing. They're both BSing. They don't like each other. There's no way in heck that Trump likes McConnell. And McConnell privately probably has a little voodoo doll of Trump that he's stabbing with pins as violently, as quickly as he possibly can. So, no, there's no love between these two guys. But if you want tax reform, okay, if you want lower taxes, this is a good thing. If you want Obamacare to you know, repeal and replace, this is a good thing. If you want any of Trump's agenda items to get through, this is a good thing. And I sort of, I object to some of these different conservatives and Make America Great Again people saying, "Oh, this is Trump giving in to the swamp." No, he's not going to Bannon. Trump may be out of office before Bannon has time to replace all these senators that are doing Trump harm. And Trump realizes that. He's got a limited amount of time. He's got 3 years in change to make change. So what happens here right now is critical. And they both men realize it. McConnell realizes he could lose the Senate if they don't get anything done, which means he loses his perky job. And Trump realizes that he could be out of the Oval Office without achieving anything. Well, it's not necessarily true, but you get the point. So I think that this is good. It's a good thing. And all right. When we come back, I have that Hillary Clinton Weinstein clip. You heard about it today. I want to play it for you. I've got some thoughts on this because the Weinstein story really is fascinating. It's going to continue. It's going to continue and continue to unravel. I find it funny that, I've answered the why now. But I also think need to answer the what now. What happens? I mean, what of all of this outrage and all of these cries for prosecution and for accountability? What actually is going to happen at the end of all of this? Because I don't think people have answered that question very, very well. And I think some of the answers that I have heard are suspiciously deficient. All right, don't go anywhere. We're back after the break. We got John Wolfe up next with the news. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Evolve 790 KABC.
Welcome back, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. It's about 8:04 in the evening, Monday night, plowing right through Monday. How was your Monday, by the way? Everybody survived this? Monday is my absolute favorite day of the week. Do I sound like a broken record? How often do I say this? I love it. Every Monday, exactly. I love Mondays. You've got. Can I explain? I said last hour that I'm an optimist, right? That I'm a positive person. So I'm going to explain why Mondays are so great. You got the whole week ahead of you. You got all these days to get everything done. It's a great feeling. You know, sometimes when you're like, it's a Thursday, you're up against a clock. You got things to do, and then there's a weekend coming up, and everything shuts down. Yeah. So I like Mondays. I'm a TGIM guy. So there it is, my favorite day of the week. 1-800-222-5222 if you'd like to be on the program. sam@samnation.com is the email. Also, as you heard, we do follow Twitter during the course of the program and engage as needed with any input that we may receive there, and that's @samnation on Twitter. Okay. You saw this, you heard, I was mentioning how Hillary is doing her book tour, and as part of this is talking about, believe it or not, she has to answer questions from time to time. And on BBC, she was doing an interview on BBC on Friday. She was getting kind of a relatively softball interview with Andrew Marr on the BBC and gets asked about Harvey Weinstein, this sexually predatory behavior that he engaged in. And this is Hillary's response.
This kind of behavior cannot be tolerated anywhere, whether it's in entertainment, politics. Well, after all, we have someone admitting to being a sexual assaulter in the Oval Office. There has to be a recognition that we must stand against this kind of action that is so sexist and misogynistic.
And this depends upon women coming forward and having the courage to come forward.
Right.
And yet in your book, the three women brought onto stage by Trump attacking your husband, and you kind of dismiss them. Was that the right thing to do? Are you sure about that?
Well, yes, because that had all been litigated. I mean, that was the subject of a huge investigation, as you might recall, in the late 90s. And there were conclusions drawn, and that was clearly in the past.
Unbelievable. This is what everyone is, by the way, it's what everyone is reacting to. Because as soon as, and it didn't get over here that quickly, it kind of started percolating on Saturday, and by Sunday it was big news. This is so rich in nonsense, in truly imaginative facts that I need to address them one by one. So first, she says, this kind of behavior cannot be tolerated anywhere, whether it is in entertainment, politics. She pauses after politics, at which point Andrew Marr starts saying, well, because what's he about to bring up? I mean, this woman, Hillary Clinton, literally acted as her husband's enforcer during the time that he was in politics. And involved in a variety of peccadilloes, different problems with women, had allegations from the past, had present day allegations right in the time with Monica Lewinsky. And Hillary Clinton was the one who managed these, as she put them, bimbo eruptions. Right. She went around trash talking these women and doing precisely the kind of thing that you had Harvey Weinstein's lawyers doing. Right. You know the story. Right. So this is fascinating. You can almost see it's a glimpse into Hillary's brain, how it works, that she just completely rearranges it. And then the distinction that she makes is that, oh, those allegations at the time of the election, they'd already been litigated. But the reason that they hadn't already been litigated, and the reason that they're relevant now, is that part of this conversation, right, about what happened with Weinstein, is that these allegations about him were out there for so long, and in effect had been litigated on a small scale. People raised these issues and brought them up, and were literally cowed into silence, threatened, bought off, paid for. And that's exactly what the Clintons did. It is exactly what the Clintons did. And I think, you know, and I look at this and I, of course, yes, I enjoy the Schadenfreude because, well, that's the delight in the misfortune of others. Yes, I enjoy the Schadenfreude. Nice German word. Because we have heard nothing but empty, silly, nonsensical proclamations of moral superiority from the Clintons, from the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, from the Democratic Party. They have always put themselves in a place of enlightened superiority to the rest of us, you know, plebeians. I mean, to the point that, you know, you have something like this happen and they can't even wrap their minds around it. You remember Weinstein's first reaction? You remember his statement that he issued after all the allegations came out? He says, I am sorry. I am sorry to the extent that I've harmed any of you. I am sorry. I will seek help. I'm only human. I'm only human. And to atone, I'm paraphrasing here. Okay, I'm paraphrasing. But, and to atone, I am going to do a documentary on the NRA and bring down the NRA. Thank you so much. It's tone deaf. Absolutely tone deaf because it betrayed something very important, which is that liberals cover for their misdeeds always with political activism, with social justice, with promoting victimology. They themselves can do anything and act in any way until they're, you know, gosh forbid, caught. And it's an interesting thing that it happened now. But they're, you know, look at how long these runs are. And Hillary absolutely okay with dismissing, for example, when we're talking about Bill Clinton, dismissing a woman who alleged rape. Who alleged rape at the hands of a man who at the time, Bill Clinton at the time, was attorney general. And she was a state employee. This is not insignificant stuff. And the fact that it, you know, it was already litigated. Well, it wasn't because of the enormous disparity in power between the two individuals. So a lot of people right now are talking about, well, what happens? You know, what happens in all this? There's, I don't know if you noticed this, but a couple news stories about the Clinton Foundation keeping the Harvey Weinstein money. They're keeping the cash. A little known fact, actually, if you must know, is that Harvey Weinstein ended up, Bill Clinton ended up raising about $2 million when he was getting sued by Paula Jones. He raised $2 million. You know, Harvey Weinstein was one of the top contributors to that war chest that Bill Clinton's defense fund, when he was a sitting president, he was raising private money to help cover his criminal defense at the time. And I have a friend who was actually one of the attorneys for Paula Jones. And there's some, I don't know, it's not, I don't want to get off on any tangents, but I know more about this than a lot of other people. And so of the 800, I think 900K or so that her attorneys obtained for her, all of that, none of that was paid by Bill Clinton. The irony of ironies here is that some of that cash came from Harvey Weinstein himself. And this explains when people were crowing for a week, why doesn't Hillary, get up and make a statement? You know, it was a week of deafening silence from the Clintons. You had every reasonable person out there saying, this is unacceptable behavior, deeply disturbing. I thought Harvey was a good guy, but turns out I'm wrong. You know, that type of stuff. A week of silence from the Clintons, because the connection between these two families goes back a long, long way. And when you have somebody, I guess when you have somebody help pay off your sexual harasser, that type of connection is, you know, will run deep. It happened. All of this happened. And it's not, this history isn't even, this isn't even that ancient. We're just going back, you know, we're going back to the 90s. I realize ancient for some. Well, now we're having a discussion about this, right? Now people are talking about morality. You know, that's the, you know, gosh forbid that there actually be some morality. What really matters, and this is what frustrates me, what really matters to a lot of people is, how do things look? How socially aware am I? What virtue signaling am I engaging in? What platitudes am I putting out there? And then privately, these people act like pigs. You know, I think most of America right now is, we're disgusted by fake. You know, we don't want fake. And I to some extent, maybe this last election was a rejection of that. You know, we don't want people who tell us one thing and then in private do another. You know, with it's funny. And she says, we've got a sexual assaulter in the Oval Office. Hillary Clinton said that, the clip I played. We've got a sexual assaulter in the Oval Office. She's referring to Trump. It's insane. She's nuts, right? And, playing to a base. But it's exactly the opposite. Trump's a guy that says what he says, and he's crass and he's crude, but there are not lines of women accusing him of untoward behavior. And I think that people crave a certain amount of authenticity, which is what you don't get with so many people on the left. Virtue signaling, saying, you know, things that, you know, that sound good and that are, you know, that are by all accounts, nice and pleasant, but then in the privacy and in the back office, what happens when, you know, you hear the stories of Hillary Clinton, the doors close and all of a sudden screaming and yelling and shouting and four letter words left and right, very inauthentic. And it's the same with this behavior. So I'm really encouraged by all of this. And I'm enjoying that this is coming out, and all the participants in it. That's the real story here. It isn't just about Harvey Weinstein. It's all of the participants in it, all of Hollywood. that incessantly and nonstop is telling all of us how we should live our lives, how morally superior they are, how great they are, how God's greatest gifts to the universe, how dare we drive our cars anywhere. We should all be walking and pedaling our bicycles and saving the earth and God knows what else. These guys, and it's all of it, they're rotten to the core. So what the fallout is here? There's political fallout. This is it. I think that Hollywood loses its moral high ground, or to some extent loses its moral high ground. There's going to be lawsuits, and it's not going to be just against the Weinstein Company. The Weinstein Company, and I was going to address this just to give you some perspective on this. The Weinstein Company probably will have to, in some way or other, protect itself from lawsuits, and they may have to reorganize. They may have to close. You know, if you've got a corporation and it's an effective shield. If that company goes under, this is why there's talk of it. They may have so many lawsuits that come about that it'll be cheaper to just close it and be done. And I saw an interview with Bob Weinstein, the brother of Harvey, the less flashy, less pervy brother of Harvey Weinstein, who said something to the effect, well, yeah, we're going to rename the company and we're going to do some things and make changes. And it sounded very hopeful that he was going to remain, that the business was going to remain open. But what I heard a new name. And with a new name, usually a new entity. And I think what you're going to see here, this is just a little lawyer perspective. I think what you're going to see here is that the entity, the actual corporation, is going to close, and its assets, right, are going to be purchased, are going to be bought out by whatever new entity is there. And they may, you know, that maneuver may help them avoid some of the losses. They're going to want to dump everything onto Harvey. This is going to be like Nuremberg, you know, where it was all Hitler. He did it all by himself. I know it's an extreme example, but there were enablers, large number of enablers. You don't get away with this just on yourself. And this is Hollywood's doing. All these moral high ground people, all with egg on their faces. All right, Sam Rejofsky, don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I saw this happen. I can't even believe this. A Mississippi school district has pulled the book To Kill a Mockingbird because it's making people feel uncomfortable. Well, yeah, this is in Biloxi. And apparently the school board decided that the district, after receiving complaints that some of the book's language makes people feel uncomfortable, that they ought to pull it. There's some language, quote, there's some language in the book that makes people feel uncomfortable, and we can teach the same lesson with other books. Now, this is the Harper Lee novel. It's about racial inequality, small town. You know, I don't know. I think when I went to law school, I would guess that there were a number of people there inspired to become lawyers and advocates on the basis of this book. I'm at a loss for words because, you know, on one hand, the left wants us to understand how horrible and unjust America is. I mean, forget was. They want to say is. But they don't want to talk about our history. And they want to package everything in a nice, nice, nice way. And here's my take on it. I love America. I love this country. I'm the first to admit that there are problems and that we have an uncomfortable past. But I do not believe in sugarcoating anything. I'm a realist. And I think that novels and literature that promote a positive message, like To Kill a Mockingbird, but that use maybe perhaps some offensive language. Oh, offensive language that might be hurtful to young, developing snowflakes. I think it's good. I think it's important to realize these things and to have something that gives context, gives, in this case, a literary context to a historical era. And by the author of the book, her point, her intent is to make people feel uncomfortable with how minorities were treated. And the hero of the book, right, is an opponent of racism and of discriminatory practices. I'm baffled, but it's another example. It's another example where we really care so much about feelings over substance. We care about how things feel and the reaction. We care about the reaction of the percipient instead about the substance of the issue. And this is going to become a really uncomfortable place to be. By the way, this is what distinguishes us as a country from other countries. We have a First Amendment that does not allow the government to come in and tell us what not to say or what to say. There's no compulsion or prohibition to speech generally. It's a great thing. But this great thing, It's a responsibility that has to be then taken and has to be accepted, right? We see this with Antifa. We see this with these alt-left, crazy alt-left protesters. You can't speak or we're going to beat you up. And I don't care who does it, if it's the alt-left or the alt-right or the alt-anybody. That's unacceptable, but it comes from a world where their feelings, how I feel, how you made me feel, you hurt my feelings, is more important than you expressing yourself or you exercising your First Amendment rights. In the real world, the First Amendment is still the law of the land. In the real world, people are going to say things that you don't like. It's just a fact of life. And going through school and being robbed of the opportunity to hear hurtful things, offensive things, you know, even horrible, truly horribly offensive things, is a missed opportunity to prepare you for Realville, which is that world out there, outside of public school, private school, colleges, et cetera, et cetera. All right, don't go anywhere. We got John Wolfe up next with the news. He is Mr. Real. He'll give you the straight scoop. No sugarcoating there. And I, Sam Rogowski, will be back after this.
News. Talk. Evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, 1-800-222-5222 if you'd like to be on the program. sam@samnation.com is the email. I'm noticing a lot of blowback from Trumpists. Reacting to the press conference earlier today. We played some clips of it last hour, but just surveying my sources and looking at my emails here, I see a lot of unhappy people out there. So I know I'm not going to use Lindsey Graham to justify it. I'm not, but I'm going to play you a clip. This is Lindsey Graham discussing the cold hard reality of what's going on the Hill. Because what you got to understand is that Trump realizes when you listen to that press conference and it was lovey dovey. If you didn't catch it, it was lovey dovey. You had Trump talking nicely about McConnell. You had McConnell talking nicely about Trump. And for those of us who are astute observers of politics, we're left scratching our heads going, what is this? What parallel universe have I dropped into? But it all comes down to the necessity of politics. If they're going to get anything done, if Trump is going to put any wins in his win column, he realizes he needs McConnell. And I would say this, I called it a capitulation last hour. I stand by that. Mitch McConnell hates Trump. Trump is, I think, a little more agnostic on McConnell, truthfully. But McConnell, to McConnell, Trump is an existential threat because McConnell's the swamp and Trump is the stirrer, the pot stirrer of national discontent against establishment politics. So truly to McConnell and others, an existential threat. So there's a press conference, a separate press conference, and Lindsey Graham. Actually, not a press conference, excuse me. This is CBS Face the Nation with John Dickerson. This is on Sunday. So day before this press conference, and you start to understand why the press conference love-in happened. Because Lindsey Graham gets asked by John Dickerson on CBS, what happens if you don't, you know, if you don't get tax reform done? I realize there's a lot on Congress's plate, but what happens if you don't get it done?
If we don't, we're dead. It's a symptom of a greater problem. If we don't cut taxes and we don't eventually repeal and replace Obamacare, then we're going to lose across the board in the House in 2018. And all of my colleagues running in primaries in 2018 will probably get beat. It will be the end of Mitch McConnell as we know it. So this is a symptom of a greater problem. If we do cut taxes and we do repeal and replace Obamacare, it doesn't matter what Bannon do because we'll win.
But Steve Bannon has said that Republicans should go to war against Mitch McConnell, that all y'all should get rid of him and that should be the Republican rallying cry.
Mitch McConnell's not our problem. Our problem is that we promised to repeal and replace Obamacare and we failed. We promised to cut taxes and we've yet to do it. If we're successful, Mitch McConnell's fine. If we're not, we're all in trouble.
You know, what he means to say is John McCain's our problem. And Susan Collins is our problem. And all these insufferable fools that are obstructing the people's agenda. That's what he really means. So what he's saying in effect, but listen to it. That's how I think that's really honest. I'll tell you when politicians are lying and when they're telling the truth. That is really honest. Because Mitch McConnell, he's a mascot, if you will, if nothing else. If he had the votes behind him, if he had other members of the Senate, Mitch McConnell's, at the end of the day, just another vote in the Senate. The other senators matter. Their votes matter. And so it's, you know, it's getting things done. And if they don't get it done, if they stubbornly put their heels into the ground and obstruct this agenda, then they're all going to get voted out. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Yeah, and all right, we're going to hang in there. There's more on this when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski putting in a good word for my good friend, Attorney Sweet James Bergner. This is the lawyer to call. If you are hurt, you get hurt anywhere, and you're kind of lost, you're wondering what to do, or maybe you're not lost. You think you know what you're doing. Here's a pro tip. You don't. I'm sorry. Don't want to sugarcoat it. You don't. You need to call a professional. You need to call somebody who knows what they're doing, who understands the system, who lives in the system, and who's trustworthy and will take your hand and get you through it. That guy is Sweet James. Look, no recovery, no fee. So you don't pay anything up front. It doesn't cost you anything. If you don't, for whatever reason, recover something, and he's got like a great success rate. I think it's like 97, 98% on his cases. So you're not going to have that problem. But you don't pay him anything unless he gets you a recovery. And also, all consultations with them are free. So give them a call, go through the particulars of what's going on, and you'll immediately feel better. You'll have that great feeling at the end of the phone call, like, ah, oh, I'm so glad I did that. I know what I'm doing now, and I'm getting taken care of. 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or go to his website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And, well, I keep talking about this press conference with McConnell because there's another element to it. Looming in the background is the ghost of Steve Bannon. And this is, not even a ghost. It's not an apparition. He's real. And he's out there and he's got chains in his hands and he's got, you know, he's out there, you know, spooking the Republican establishment because he's threatening. I've described this in past shows. He's threatening to take his candidates, his, you know, Trump agenda oriented candidates, and primary challenge in the primaries establishment Republicans, people like Jeff Flake in Arizona, McCain in Arizona, although I don't know if McCain's going to be running necessarily for re-election, but other candidates like that. We saw it happen with Luther Strange, was the inside man for the job in the primary in Alabama, and he got booted, right with Roy Moore. So that's behind the scenes. There is this real threat that these sitting Republicans, these Republican senators who are, we'll be honest, mostly do nothing and have obstructed Trump's agenda, that they're going to that Bannon is going to fight an all out war and get them booted. And I think that that's part of what's bringing Mitch McConnell to the table. It's a little bit humbling to realize that there are winds of change. So ever the politician, McConnell realizes, you know, adapt or die. It's a maxim. It's true in business. I think it's true actually in personal relationships. You know, I mean, you gotta change sometimes. You've got to be flexible. Not flexible, you break. And it's absolutely true in politics. And I knew, you know, I remember during the campaign, people would say things like, you know, Trump is this absolutist guy and he's hostile and he's wicked and he's just going to go in there and he's going to make war with everybody. And maybe your perception is that's what's going on. But I look at this McConnell thing and I see, you know, one week Trump is lobbing grenades at him and calling him do nothing Mitch McConnell and teasing him on Twitter. And the next week he's all but embracing him in the Rose Garden. And to you, you know, one take on it, to some, you know, you've probably heard, well, this is just another example of Trump being disingenuous and being dishonest and just being a fraud. And I see this as being the type of personal flexibility that's required to get things done. I mean, Trump's not standing up there to all you Trumpists. Trump's not standing up there and capitulating. He's not up there getting, you know, giving anything up. Maybe he's going back on some insults that he's thrown around, but he is willing to sacrifice his personal credibility to some extent with vis-a-vis this relationship with McConnell in order to get his agenda done. His agenda is important to him. And so for all of you out there who are Trump supporters and who are freaking out right now and thinking this is the beginning of the end, I read this as him being willing to do just about anything to be true to the promises that he made during the campaign. So we will see how this plays out. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
News. Talk. Evolve. Talk Radio 790. KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. There are schools, colleges all across America that are busy drafting and distributing flyers of what Halloween costumes not to wear I mean, they're getting into specifics. Can't dress as a geisha. That seems I've seen that on a number of the lists. Geisha being a woman of entertainment, not necessarily sexual entertainment, just in the Japanese culture. And what else is on this list? Oh, you cannot. This is a big no-no. You can't wear a Native American headdress. So you can wear an Indian headdress, yes, just not a Native American one. So if you want to go as the little white cloud that cried to your neighborhood Halloween party, you are not bringing any feathers on your hair. You know, we actually have a beautiful headdress at home. Does this make me a bad person? Daniel got one from a relative of ours, and he loves it. He's got it in the room, and he looks good in it. I'm not going to lie. So that's a no-no. Can't wear any Mexican clothing. You can't dress up as a Mexican simply by wearing a sombrero. That's a no-go. And it's all about this cultural appropriation nonsense, right? They say that other people's cultures are not a costume. I make an observation. A world run by liberals is not fun. It's just not fun. I think of the agonies that you go through. I'm 37, so I'm a little bit beyond this. But if I were in college right now, think of all the energy wasted, right? Wasted by these kids worrying about what to do and not to do and when to do it and not to do it. And like I said earlier, I think that these things sort of regulate themselves if we were to allow it, right? I'll give you an example. I think if you didn't have this memo and you show up with a headdress, whether you're there as Elizabeth Warren or not, I don't know, but you show up with an Indian headdress, and maybe you run into somebody who's like, hey, that's, you know, I'm Native American. And you know, by the way, you know, my great-great-grandfather died at Wounded Knee, and that's actually a sacred. I don't know. And you'd have a conversation and you'd talk it out. But what happens in this world is you show up with the headdress and you get reported. You get reported to the administration. And an administrator calls you in, and an administrator punishes you. And what's missing in that is the interaction, the dialogue, the conflict resolution between one person, one human being, and another human being. I think we're not doing it in elementary school. We're not doing it in junior high. We're robbing kids of this opportunity to resolve conflicts in high school. And then we're coddling them. We're continuing to helicopter parent them in college. So I'm worried. I'm worried for every 22-year-old that comes out of college and thinks that this is the real world. Because it's not. At least not for now. All right, we'll be back tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Go check out the podcast if you missed any portion of the show. Go to the podcast, samnation.com, and get it there. See you tomorrow.